Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. Prairie's a member of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Independent Societies, of Independent Congregations. And this society does things its own way. We're a lay-led group providing religious education for youths K through 8. Our program committee organizes and presents our programs on Sunday mornings for adults. So that's a little bit of what we do. I just want to mention something. On Thursday night, we had an all-committee meeting here. We did a spaghetti dinner and then did some socializing and then got on to committee business. And you were forewarned that it was going to be a fun time, and indeed it was. So for those of you that missed it, come in the next quarter. We're going to try it again. And we really got a lot of work done had a great time to boot, so welcome this morning. The chalice lighting, Gene Farley, will be doing for us today.
I had to ask Bob what chalice lighting meant, because this was new to me, and really he said to really present something that is involves all of us. And so I'd like to dedicate the concept of the chalice lighting to this planet which we all share, to all of us of all races, all religions, all creeds, to this humanity of which we are a part, and to our communities, our world communities, our national communities, our family communities, and the communities that we live in and are active in. And hopefully we can pay attention to all of these, because we are a part of a whole. And when any part is suffering, we all suffer. So that I'd like to dedicate it to us helping each other, helping others, and helping all and this planet in which we live.
We're fortunate this morning to have Dr. Gene Farley with us, who will be presenting a talk called Community, What We Say and What We Do. Dr. Farley was the former head of the family practice medicine at the UW Medical School here, and until very recently, a candidate for the 2nd Congressional District, so if you'd welcome Dr. Farley.
But has-beens never quit. Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here. And the topic I chose is one that I think is essential to our very existence. And why I titled it Community, What We Say and What We Do, because as I talk about community, I'm going to be talking, you know, we have to think in terms of our world community, our national community, which is our American community, our shared responsibilities for each other, and how do we as individuals, families, and other groups best fulfill these responsibilities when millions of people are concerned. You hear the rhetoric that we can do it ourselves. And what is ourselves? If ourself is singular, we cannot do it. It starts with ourself, but it takes ourselves and en masse to help resolve some of the problems which others face and which we ourselves face. And I think to start, because obviously I feel the government, our government is a place where we can start to make sure we assume our shared responsibilities as members of a community to help improve our country and this world. And I'd like to quote Marion Wright Edelman, because I think she says it so well. We need to stop talking about government as something divorced from us. Our government is our public home. This is the way, in a democracy, that we express community and national values. When government cared and responded to problems, we had an enormously important impact. And that is we. When government cares, which is us, we have a major impact. Yet, as you listen to the rhetoric today, let's get rid of government, let's weaken us, ourselves, so that we can have very little say in a united way as to how we respond as a people. I keep thinking, what do we listen to every day? And I'm going to read you some things that every one of us hear or say at least once a day. Well, maybe we don't hear it every day, but we almost. They're things, they're what messages that we just believe in, like gospel. All men are created equal. They are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government. Of the governed. It is the government which can represent us as the people. Alone, we can't do it. Another thing we hear, many places say the pledge to the flag, and I've been spoke at Qantas and the Optimist Clubs this week. I always started out with the pledge to the flag, and I pointed out, what do we say? One nation, indivisible. Not many, not 50 different states, but one nation, indivisible. We are one people with liberty and justice for all. We have to give meaning to these things we say every day. In America the Beautiful, which was sung one of these things, thine alabaster cities gleam undimmed by human tears. Do we really mean that? We say, get rid of the cities, ignore them, cut them down, let them cry and weep and fester in their own palms. Yet we sing, thine alabaster cities gleam undimmed by human tears. And then we say, crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Do we really mean it? We have to mean it. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Do people mean it when they say the Lord's Prayer? I think not, obviously. Otherwise it would be different. But we've got to start meaning it. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Do we really mean it? That's a very dangerous statement. We're going to bomb the heck out of anybody who we disagree with. We have to start thinking through what we say. And a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Is this a government of the people, by the people, and for the people? When 63% of those eligible to vote last time did not vote, when 37% of those eligible to vote voted, 19% of those eligible to vote put in the very right-wing conservative Congress we have today, is that a government of the people, and by the people, and for the people? I say it is not. Other messages we hear less often, but we say we believe in. And this you hear in the Jewish Seder, you hear it in Christian tradition, love your neighbor as yourself. We have been so focusing on love yourself that we've forgotten that, hey, we have to love our neighbor. And the neighbor isn't just the person next door or the person like me. The person I have to love may be as different than I as anyone could be. But we have to start to think, what does this mean? And then one that we talk about but seldom hear, and which I think is the basis for our government, is we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do hereby ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America. If we recognize that that was how you interpret the Constitution in the context of that, we would say the business of government is different than we say it is today. We say the business of government is to balance the budget, get off the people's back, don't give me any regulations, let big business control. If we believe our Constitution, we have to pay attention to that preamble. And now I'm going to give a couple more quotes, and I'll get off this quoting stuff. Message is more often heard in the past, less often heard today, with many unthinking doubters. The test of our progress is not whether we add to the abundance of those who have much, it is whether we provide enough to those who have too little. That was in the 1930s with Franklin Delano Roosevelt. If a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. That's in the 1960s with John F. Kennedy. And the real enemy of genuine free enterprise is monopoly, capitalism, the group that is constantly absorbing small business and industry, making it impossible for the average person under free enterprise to start a system, to start a business or factory of his own. And that's William J. Ebbew, the founder of the Capital Times. And these are things we have heard for years but have ignored because we have so focused on ourselves. And John Leonard in this morning's Sunday morning, thank you. What did I tell you? I told you what he said. I'm going to miss this one. I didn't write it down. He said, we're killing ourselves in the... Skip it. If any of you heard him talking about some movie, but his statement of introduction, how we're killing ourselves essentially in self-absorption and ignoring our community. And so the way he put it was much cleverer than I'm putting it. But we are killing ourselves in self-absorption. What's good for me should be good for thee. What's good for me has to be good for thee. In other words, what's good, it can't be just me. So, as I said, the business of our government is to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessing of the liberty to ourselves and our posterity. How do we, as citizens of a government, make this have meaning? Because it cannot have meaning if we don't care what the issues are that puts people into office. And I think no matter what our religious beliefs, no matter what our creeds, we all care intensely about what happens when someone goes to office. And I think that we have to start thinking, as we say, get the government off our back. I'm not saying get us off our backs, since the government is us if we are responsible. What can we do as a group of people? And again, using Mary Edelman, our government is our national home. What responsibilities do we have? Because the corporations and the private sector says, we are the only ones who can invest. But we then invest for the bottom line and short-term profit. But we, the people, have to invest in our future. And I think that we, the people, through our government, which is us, should be investing in our human capital. We should be making sure there are jobs for everybody. We can't do it alone. We have to do it with us, the people, through our government, and the private sector, which can be individuals, groups, corporations, whatever. But the two together have to make sure everybody is employed and has a living wage. We cannot afford to continue to say, look, unemployment's gone down as poverty's gone up. We have to have strong public education. We should have no such thing as a poor school district. Because why should an American child or any child living in this country have to have a lesser education because the tax base of his or her community can't afford something better? So we have to say the level of education of any citizen in this community cannot be dependent on the tax base of the community in which that individual goes to school. It has to be the responsibility of all of us to make sure we invest in our human capital and that our children are well educated and prepared for the future. We also, as we invest in our human capital, we have to make sure everybody has health care. We cannot afford to have some people with health care and some without. We cannot afford to have 50% of all bankruptcies, personal bankruptcies, have health care costs involved in them, and 30% because of health care costs. We cannot afford to have 43 million Americans uninsured, and while we have 38 million on Medicaid and we're trying to destroy Medicaid, we cannot afford to make sure we cannot afford to separate people out on the basis of health, on the basis of age, on the basis of employed or unemployed. We have to make sure everybody's covered. It's the only affordable way. We have to also invest in our community capital, our infrastructure. And what is this? These are our school buildings. These are our hospitals. These are our libraries. These are transportation and hopefully affordable transportation for everyone. These are our environment. We have to make sure there's this infrastructure in place. That is investing that we the people can do through our community. We have to invest in our social capital to make sure that we have in place those things that allow individuals and families to grow and thrive. I don't care how we define family. As family physicians, Lindy and I never had the responsibility to tell you what your family is. We had the responsibility of working with you to define those individuals, those people who served as your family and gave you the support systems needed to be able to grow emotionally and mature well. So we have to make sure we have in place those systems which help allow individuals and families to grow. And we have to protect our environment. We've been talking about environment as our social environment, our community environment, which we have to have safe. We can talk about it as the ecological environment of which this whole planet and we're all a part of. We have to consider both, and we can do it. Now, how does this fit in to a Sunday morning message? I believe it relates to community, and we cannot separate our theological beliefs, our social beliefs, our sense of responsibility, our commitment to each other, from what we do as individual voting citizens. It is impossible to separate it. And we have to pay attention. We can't be one issue. One issue can absolutely destroy anything. Because I can be against something and someone votes for me because I'm against it, or I can be for something and someone votes for me because I'm for it. And I may be wrong with everything else. So people have to start thinking. And we're the people. Unfortunately, we always talk to the converted. It's how we get to the non-converted. And one other thing, I think another quote, governments can err, presidents do make mistakes, but the immortal Dante tells us the divine justice weighs the sins of the cold-blooded and the sins of the warm-hearted in different scales. Better the occasional faults of a government that lives in a spirit of charity than the consistent commissions of a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference. And that is a quote from Franklin Delano Roosevelt in his second renomination speech in 1936. It says, true today as it ever was. To get this, we all have to work hard to keep informed. We have to pay attention. We have to pay attention to essentially thinking enough of ourselves so we can think of others. We have to start and be involved in the community, which I know most of you are. We have to help others get involved. We have to try to keep informed. We have to vote on the issues, not on a single issue, but on the issues which are broad, and make sure that we get somebody who can best carry forth what we as a people should be and can be. And I think we have, obviously, to do this, to afford this, included in what we vote for, we have to consider how do we share our fiscal or financial responsibility for this. I happen to believe those of us who benefit the most from this national community should pay the most for it. And those who benefit the least should pay the least for it. That's essentially defining a graduated income tax. And I think we have to have campaign finance reform so that we the people buy our candidates, not RJR, not General Motors, not the NRA, not General Electric, not those who have millions of dollars, but we the people, through our taxes, through our government, pay to make sure our candidates can run independent of great money and great wealth. We have a fantastic amount of work to do that. And again, this seems like a political message, but I don't know how to separate a social community message from our responsibilities to our greater community as individuals and as citizens. We can't do it. The Germans thought they could do it by ignoring and denying. Americans must not and cannot, if we are really believe all those things we say on a regular basis, such as one nation, indivisible, or with liberty and justice for all. All the things I've read, we gotta help other people understand what they're saying as we work with our own selves to make sure we know how to give meaning. Thank you. As I as you know, I can't separate the political from the other. But I feel this needs discussion because each of us have different insights and concerns and wonderments about how we put this together. And as you know, we constantly learn from each other. And I'm always impressed the tiny little bit I know when we put it all together, what I learned from others. So, discussion. And I think it's hard because people, we the people, have refused to pay attention to the issues. As one of my sons says, it's always easier for people to listen about a person's sex life and guns because those are more understandable than it is about the real issues that affect us. And it's easier to think of a flat tax because it doesn't require thinking. It just lets us say, oh, that sounds wonderful. All of us will pay the same percentage. And I have to point out, if I earn, well, they say, let's say $30,000, they won't tax it under that. But if I earn $30 million, and all of it's from interest income and not from working, I won't be taxed either. I mean, so that there's craziness, absolute craziness in it. And people have to think. And as someone said, well, I won't say it because it's very, I'm just going to give a very political statement. But people have to think when they vote. You saw the bumper sticker last time around? Vote Republican, it's easier than thinking. So, obviously, those of you who are Republicans, I apologize, because I'm a Republican to think too. We have, our family, not our nuclear family, but our expanded family, with our brothers and sisters-in-laws and relatives and nieces and nephews, we have some very conservatives there. And they're lovely people, and they care. They care intensely. They happen to vote in a way that negates their caring because they don't really look at the issues. But they're good, good people. And so I have to be careful. I mean, they know my politics, and some of them would vote for me, some wouldn't. But we have to be careful because we cannot demonize anybody. That destroys everything we're doing. I can get very angry at what a group in a party is doing, and they get very angry at what a group in our party is doing. But I have to say, individuals, we're a fantastic group. Well, I don't know as courage or skill. Some friends asked if I'd consider a run at the Democratic convention last spring. And I'm planning to retire July 7th. I'd take a welding course at MATC. I'm going to do metal structure. Lindy and I bought a used RV, Micro Mini or Mini Micro, I forget what it is. And we're going to spend more time seeing our kids who are scattered all over the country and seeing our grandchildren. And we have a farm. And I plant apple trees, she trims and sprays them and says, why do I keep planting? She has to keep trimming. We always have a big vegetable garden. The house needs a lot of repair. So I was going to really make use of my retirement. Instead, this year, we didn't get the apples picked in all of them before they froze. We didn't get the potatoes picked before they froze. Yeah. And now we're going back to the books and I'll order some more apple trees. But anyway, Lindy and I thrashed it through the running. And people have always known my politics, whether my friends are conservative or liberal or anything else. I know my politics. I don't require friendship to agree with me. I can have friends who disagree with me, but they have to know my politics. That's their sufferance. And so since I've always been outspoken, and you know, people haven't necessarily wanted to hear it, but all of a sudden, given the chance to speak out and be heard, would I take it? So Lindy and I thrashed it through for a long time. That obviously changes our whole direction of where we're going in our life. Decided it was the only responsible thing to do. So that part, it eased my frustration. And even now, it's easier here for me to be talking and to go to service clubs and the parties where I can speak on the issues, because that's what has to be emphasized. No matter what the person's politics, they have to pay attention to the issues. When you read this morning's paper, who's going to vote for Sagan, who's going to vote for Kluge, not one reporter asked them, what are the issues? They asked about the mustache, the beard, do you like this guy, the handsome, is it easy for this stuff? Issues totally ignored. That's the easiest way to do it, and it kills democracy. And, well, that's why I think we have to, again, focus on our national community, because I think that we've done a very good job of strengthening our religious communities. I mean, our religious communities are extremely strong. Some of them very, very strong and organized very strong politically. We've done a good job of organizing our social communities and even our professional communities. You know, Lindy and I know a lot of non-doctors, but we know a lot of doctors because we're doctors. And we've done a job of segregating our comfortably off communities and our poverty communities. When we lived in our rural town, there was no segregation socioeconomically. In fact, when the firemen had their chicken barbecue our last year there, it was one of my welfare patients and the wealthiest woman in town who co-chaired the fireman's chicken barbecue. You don't see that in a segregated society. We are a socioeconomically segregated society. It's a little bit like in the South in the past when the whites were totally segregated from African Americans, and so that the authorities on the African Americans were the whites who never went to school with them, who didn't work with them, who didn't know them on an equal basis. And now I think the ones who are authorities on poverty are those who have lived a totally socioeconomically segregated life and have not seen it. We are not authorities on poverty, but together we have to work to make sure we stop having the greatest gap in any Western nation between those of us very well off and those of us that are poor. We have to get closer together. And as you know, the poverty increase in this country, we now have the greatest number of Americans in poverty, the greatest percentage of Americans in poverty, more poverty in this country than any of the Western nations. And we have poverty without guaranteed wealth, without guaranteed health care. And they have poverty with guaranteed health care, and they have less poverty. So we're doing the wrong things, and why I'm so strong and why I'm running is we have to reduce this terrible inequity, because we harm both, and we destroy it. What's the book we're reading now, not Amazing Grace,
yes.
Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace.
Okay, I hope you read that.
By Kozol.
It's fantastic. And also Savage Inequalities, dealing with schools. I think so. Sure, as I don't know whether you heard on NPR, I was fortunate enough when we came out of Feingold's office a couple of weeks ago in Washington, Kathy Schulp was on her way in. She was doing NPR's documentary on campaign financing, and she was talking to people who had run or were running. And she saw us and she said, good, neither of us knew the other was going to be there. So she interviewed us. And then discussing campaign finance reform. And we also met with a professional fundraiser in Washington, and we had already been told here that to be a viable candidate, you have to raise at least $100,000. They said I should have done it by February. Hopefully I could do it by March. And you have to expect to spend between $300,000 to $500,000. The incumbent raised $820,000 the second time he ran. That was against Ada Deer, $790,000 when he ran against Tom Heck. And right now he has $440,000 or something in his campaign, and it's told that it'll go up to whatever's needed to beat whoever the incumbent is, the competitor. And where does this money come from? You know, I was supposed to be on the phone 4 or 5 to 6 hours a day. I was told this. They said, issues aren't important. You have to get the money. You can't get out and get heard. Now, I feel the issues are important. And Feingold says, much to his frustration, if you heard that, he has to raise, on the average, $10,000 a week for all 6 years of his time in office. Paul Simon quit because he had to raise, how many?
13
million for his, and that's how many thousands a week? I mean, that's more than 10,000 a week. That's something like 20,000 a week. Why? Because it costs to get TV, it costs to get mailings. So I've had more radio, more TV, and more press as an ex than I was as a candidate. Good, because that's so important. And you've got to make sure whoever gets in the office is pushed on it. People say they feel helpless. Well, they're helpless because they don't vote. And people who get in need to keep being pushed by us, and they are pushed by those who may disagree with us, because we're not united on anything. And my brother-in-law happens to be very united. He's principal of a Christian school, very fundamental, very much Christian right, terrific person. A terrific teacher, a lovely person. I would be proud to show him anywhere, have you meet him, his politics, as far as I'm concerned, are crazy. But his church is united, and every Sunday before election, they have the list of everybody and where they stand on the hot issues that they agree on. And So we got to start thinking, how do we together do it? But see, I guess what I see, it's because we have not been informed and not acted. I don't see either party with a halo. And I don't see any group with a halo. I think we as individuals have to make sure we act to force people and our legislators to pay attention. But see, I guess I see that fiscally sound, we have no problems. I happen to feel that we have to have a responsible government. But it's us. Yeah. It's not corporations. And by not voting, we say we want corporate government, which is what National Socialism was in Germany. And just having visited the Holocaust Museum, IG Farben was able to post a 27% profit in the year they had the heaviest use of slave labor. And they kept very good figures. They were capitalists. They were there. They were dealing with the marketplace, not with social conscience. And I believe that capitalism has built in it its self-destruction. And I think we are going back to 19th century economic ideology of unconstrained, raw capitalism, and 19th century social Darwinism ideology, which is unconstrained, you don't know anything for people. And those failed, and they resulted in the Depression. Now, I think Roosevelt happened to save capitalism. Capitalism has a lot to offer, but it's uncontrolled. It has its own self-destruction built in. And it'll do it as it buys each other out and gets up to bigger and bigger corporations. They talked about competition, so you buy each other out, so there's less competition. How many newspapers were there when I was a kid? How many are there now? The papers are all the same. And so the capitalism destroys itself. If we, the people, don't say that we have a social conscience that will say there are certain things capitalism has to respond to in a responsible way. But we're not talking about socialism. What? I don't see where it is.
I
don't disagree with you, Rich, but I guess I see universal health care is not socialism.
No.
Far from it. Universal education is not socialism. Far from it. Universal employment and living wages is not socialism. Far from it. Freedom to start a business and thrive is not socialism. And right now, if you want to start a small business and you can't afford to supply me health care, I can't work for you. And if you can't, and I can go for somebody who will supply me a living wage and health care. But if you can supply me health care, I may work for you. So you have to be much richer. And if I have a pre-existing condition, you don't pay anyone, because I'll cost you more. So that the benefits for business, and particularly small business, is to have universal health care, which will be attacked as socialistic. It's far from it. It's greater freedom than insurance, which we have now. It's the insurance companies will own everything, with massive, massive profits by not covering people with illnesses. So I don't see any socialism in it. I think that's, again, a code word that used to be like communism. You dismiss everything with it. And I think we have to be careful not to use it. I think you have to question me on what the issues are, and no problem there. But once we say socialism, and we'll be dismissed, healthcare will be dismissed as socialistic by doctors who now work for insurance companies. Even Russ Littlewell.
Yes, exactly.
No, Professor Buchanan speaks some good, but Russ Littlewell doesn't. I can speak to that. I think because right now the mantra is we have to balance the budget, and we have to get rid of these tax and spend Democrats. We have to make sure that we reduce the deficit and balance the budget. Now, those are nice mantras. It ignores what is the human cost of this. And that's where capitalism kills itself. When it's just on the budget, it's not on human condition. And I look at the realities of this mantra. The government, the debt was $1 trillion when Reagan came in. During his term and Bush's, it went up to $4 trillion. And these were the borrow and spend Republicans. And I'm here, I'm talking partisan, because we're talking Democrat and Republican. Under every administration, under the administrations where you had a Democratic president and Democratic Congress, we had a lower deficit every time. When we had a Democratic president and one House of Congress Republican, we had a little higher deficit spending. When we had a Republican president and a Republican Senate, we had the highest deficit. When we got finally down to a Democratic president again, and two houses Republican, the deficit's a little bit higher than it was when it's all Democratic. So people don't pay attention to figures. These slogans have come in, tax and spend, it's fantastic. It makes people not have to think at all. And we gotta start thinking, what is the real meaning of this? And it's gobbledygook. It is not there to educate, it's not there to give facts. It's there to cover up. It is the propaganda technique of any dictator. And we don't want a dictatorship in this country. We don't have to get it. I'm not saying Republicans are dictators and Democrats aren't. I don't see anyone with a halo. And I blame the Democrats for what's going on because the conservatives have been in control of Congress, whether Republican or Democrat, for most of my life. So I don't, it may have been the Democratic conservatives or Republican conservatives who do not pay attention to where we're going as a whole nation, but they talk dollars rather than people. And we can do both. We don't need to cut out earned income for tax credit for the poor. We don't need to cut out AmeriCorps so that people can't afford to go to colleges easily. I went through college on the GI Bill. And was that a government handout? It may have been, but I must admit, as veterans, we all benefit from, I think the nation benefits from. So we have to pay attention. Well, that's that. I still get chills up and down my spine, Bill. I mean, when we went to that march, it was during the days of civil rights and there was still a lot of violence of whites against the demonstrating blacks. And we were thinking of taking our oldest boy with us, but we felt, no, we weren't sure it was going to be safe. I usually carry a pocket knife because there's a screwdriver in it. I made sure I didn't have that with me. And we went, there were 5 Greyhound buses from Ithaca, New York, and we were riding, and we left at midnight, and I delivered a young girl of her father's child, and we got on the bus. We couldn't stop until we could eat breakfast. We got south of the Mason-Dixon line after 8 o'clock, and we were going to stop to eat breakfast, and couldn't, because Ed Hart and his kids were on the bus with us, and he's an African-American physician, a friend of ours, who's politically on the same side I've been on everything. So we finally got to a hot shop in Washington, D.C. that we desegregated 2 years before. It's America I'm talking about, remember. And when we got to the march, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. If ever you wanted a place that was safe, that was peaceful, caring people, all sides. I mean, Lindy and I consider it the high point of our life. And obviously, you've all heard the I Have a Dream speech, and you all know about Martin Luther King. The thing I worry about is many of our kids haven't heard. And I think every child should have to see the Eyes on the Prize, Eye on the Prize, which is a fantastic series of documentaries that every American should have to see. And as we were getting back on the bus, we have a long way to go, but we have come a long way. Rickety old yellow school bus from Georgia was next to our big Greyhound bus. And everybody was greeting everybody else. It was a fantastic day. Brotherhood, if you ever want to see it. And as this young kid got on the bus, his little rickety school bus, to go back to Georgia, he waved and said, "Man, today I got my freedom." And it's, we've come a long way. Those of us who are socioeconomically well off, whether we're black or white, have greater opportunities in this country than we had before. We cannot segregate against race, but nor can we segregate against socioeconomic class. And we are segregating against socioeconomic, which often has race. You look at Milwaukee's unemployment rate among young black Americans. These are Americans. This is why I started out to tell us. We are a nation composed of every race, every nationality, every religion. That's us. There is no such thing as any one of us being a typical American. We're all typical Americans. If we were all African Americans here today, that's typical Americans. If we were all Asian Americans, that's typical Americans. If we were all Jewish Americans, or Christian Americans, or Native Americans, that's typical American. And I've had some good friends of me, when I was asking how to describe someone, "Oh, you look just like typical American." I said, "What are you, typical American?" I don't tell me anything. We have a daughter-in-law who is an Asian American. Her mother was in our detention camps here in this country during World War II because her parents were Japanese. Her parents were born here, but her mother was. And her father came from China after the war. So we have grandchildren who will know that one of their grandmothers was in our detention camps. We have, you know, we have within the family, we have African American, we have Asian, we have Native American, we have Jewish, we have Christian. That's American. I call it the Americanization of a family, as you watch the family. And that's what we have to think of. Instead of, are we here in Maine Americans? Should we be separate from the others? Nonsense. And we cannot do it on socioeconomic basis, and that's what we're doing now. And that's where I think, if we're truly conservative, we have to say America as a national society, as a nation, has to succeed, and all Americans have to succeed. And when we have huge poverty ghettos and extreme wealth ghettos, both armed, that does not lead to domestic tranquility. And our job of government is to help promote domestic tranquility. And assure the General Walter, promote General Walter.
Thank you very much.
And I don't know where to put this, Rick, but Bob Lawrence said, make sure all of you know, March 24th from 2 to 4 p.m., that's Sunday, here in the Perry Meeting House, there's coffee for Paul Zosma. So that's March 24th, 2 to 4 p.m. So I hope you can all come, because you got to hear the issues.